You're listening to Meeting Pod, the podcast powered by Meeting Place, the premier magazine and news source for the meat and poultry processing industry, and Alt Meat Magazine, the only business information resource for the exploding alternative meat industry.
Today's episode is sponsored by Harpak Ulma.
Hi, I'm Lisa Keefe, Editor-in-Chief of Meeting Place and Alt Meat. Welcome to this month's Meeting Pod episode dedicated to the meat alternatives market. Elizabeth Alfano is the founder of Plant Powered Consulting and CEO of VegTech Invest, which manages an investment vehicle for institutions and individuals who want to put their money where their alt protein interests are. With that perspective, Elizabeth has little patience for the doom and gloom headlines that have dominated mainstream media's coverage of the alt meat industry recently. In this alt meat episode, she lays out her market-based reasons for the wisdom of investing in the alt protein sector for the long haul. So, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us today with this conversation. There's been a long time where folks have talked about investing in the alternative meat and the alternative proteins industry, but you are immersed in it up to your neck, and you have some very different perspectives from what some of the more general news coverage has been recently. And I'm very interested in diving into this with you.
Great. Thanks for having me. And I can't wait to do that.
Amidst the headlines that are talking about a big slowdown and certain media outlets calling for the end of the quote unquote fad, I'm not going to mention the outlets, but you mentioned, and you make a very good argument for the industry being a long-term investable trend. And you have some very specific criteria for what qualifies it for that. And perhaps we can start there.
Sure. First of all, to address fad or trend, you can't declare if something, in my opinion, and I have interviewed that author, if anybody wanted to check out the Plant-Based Business Hour podcast in which I interviewed Dina Shanker, but she basically talks about one or two companies, and that's not enough to make a trend or a fad. That's just one or two companies. And then in addition, in my opinion, she doesn't really quote them in full accuracy. So I think if you look at plant-based foods, you would find the following. The IRI data for the end of 2022 did indeed show a significant slowdown in the fresh aisle of plant-based foods. Now, that to me makes a lot of sense. People are back at work. And why would you buy fresh food when you don't know when you're going to cook it? Because you're going out to dinner with your friends after work, you're eating at lunch in the cafeteria. It just doesn't make sense. And plant-based items still remain a little bit more expensive. So why take that risk that you might end up throwing it out? Just buy frozen foods. So the frozen plant-based sector was up. Now, not enough to counteract the fresh department, but it was up significantly. So then let's look at the rest of that business, where it's going. When I interviewed on the Plant-Based Business Hour, Dot Foods, which is a distributor on KHE and UNFI, focusing on natural, plant-based, et cetera, their food service business is up 40%. 2022 over 2021. Why?
Well, because the plant-based food service.
Plant-based only. Yeah. Plant-based business only in food service for Dot Foods up 40% 2022 over 2021. And that's for the reasons we discussed. People are that kid who went to college, came back to live on your couch that you had to do grocery shopping for. They're back at college and they're eating in Gen Z and millennials driving, obviously, the growth in this sector. They're back at college and their cafeteria has plant-based options, as well as corporate cafeterias and restaurants. It used to be before COVID, and I get this statistic from the Food Institute, from their quote of data essentials. Data is that it used to be 30% of all restaurants had a plant-based option, but coming out of COVID, it jumped to 48%. So you can't really get away with not having a plant-based option anymore. So when you look at the growth of food service and you look at the growth of frozen, those two tell me from a consumer standpoint only that plant-based is still up and growing. Indeed, if I can talk about consumers just for one more second, Bloomberg Intelligence, so the actual research arm, not the news arm that had the fad article, but the research arm, sticks to their predictions that plant-based will be $166 billion by the low 2030s. And that hasn't changed. And they predict specifically 2% growth for plant-based meat and about 6% growth for plant-based dairy.
And that's the work that Jennifer Bartashis has done.
I love her. Yeah. What a smart woman.
Yeah. Absolutely. So when you're talking about plant-based, just to clarify, you're not talking specifically about a plant-derived proteins, whether it's dairy or alt meat or the like. You're also talking about, particularly on the menus, being plant-forward, where you have a plant-based or you have a plant-based entree, and maybe, or are you talking about the presence of actual alt meat, alt proteins, almond milk?
I'm talking about the presence of these packaged goods. So when you look at Dot Foods, they're representing brands. They're not representing, you know, black peas and rice and how restaurants put those together. No, they're representing brands out there. And I believe that Jen is looking at that as well. Now, the Boston Consulting Group, however, when they look at the growth of plant-based foods and they stick by their number of $290 billion by 2035, give or take a year with COVID, they're looking at a broader commodities, rice and beans, as well as plant-based products. So that's why you see that bigger number, which is also growing.
Absolutely. It's a fine distinction, and it's important, I think, to be very clear on that. So what makes it a long-term investable trend? Because investors are specifically looking for return on their investment. So how does that play out?
Yes, let's talk about it. And thanks for having me on to discuss this, because I talk about it a lot on LinkedIn, and I'm just so thrilled to talk with you about it here. So what makes an investable trend? For me, what that means is you have mass adoption globally. So not Brooklyn and San Francisco, but you have mass adoption, whether you're Jewish or Catholic, whether you're old or young, whether you're black or white, whether you're Chinese or American, you have all people adopting into all parts of their life. We look at digitization, and technology has done that quite successfully. Kind of as a side note from a plant-based business hour interview, the former co-CEO of Whole Foods, Walter Robb, said that the growth of plant-based foods is the largest he'd seen in his 40 years of working in growth in grocery, and he attributed it to digitization, that kind of mass adoption. Okay, so what would give us mass adoption? Is it Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods? No, that would be sort of too brand specific. When I look at mass adoption, I look at the following. We've talked about consumer buying habits with IRI and food service and other things. I love the consumer. We all love the consumer. We track them. We research them. We engage them. We love them. Are they enough to move the needle for a secular trend such that there's mass adoption around the world? No. If industry didn't want this to happen, industry would stop them in a heartbeat. I'm not saying that consumers aren't powerful. They are. And when they combine their voice and their dollars, they do move mountains. So please don't take from this that you don't have power. You absolutely do. But I see industry, and that I mean legacy food players, sometimes meat and dairy players themselves, but also sometimes like Kellogg's. It's like Kellogg's, a foot in plant-based and, you know, Maple Leaf Foods. But these major players, their scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions, and that's just kind of a fancy way for saying up and down the supply chain, folks are starting to take out their magnifying glass and say, hey, where are you polluting? Where are you letting out emissions? Why do you have this inefficient and sort of dirty supply chain? The world is looking at this in a way it never has before because of climate change. So there's this enormous push and scrutiny on industry to get a better return. Think about how inefficient it is to cut down trees, to grow food, food that has fiber, food that has protein. Are you giving that food to people? No, you're giving it to animals, and then they need more land, water, and time. So you got to cut down more trees, trees that otherwise would have pulled carbon from the air, by the way. So really inefficient. Just give the food to people. If you want to feed people, give them the food. That's really the most direct way. And that will save you on the bottom line monetarily, as well as from a carbon standpoint. So you see industry starting to change its ways very quietly, but they're investing in alternative proteins. They're investing in novel technology. You see companies like ADM, Ingredion, Givaudan, these companies that are starting to, AB InBev, you know, these large legacy players that are saying, hey, I'm going to use my knowledge in fermentation and I'm going to start focusing on food. That's what AB InBev is doing with BioBrew, for example. So industry now wants the same thing that the consumer wants. They want it for different reasons, but they're moving in the same direction with a lot of money at the same time. Who else is moving in the same direction at the same time? Governments. So if you have a growing population, which we do, according to the United Nations, going from 8 billion people to 10 billion people, but you're not getting more land, you're not getting more water, you're going to have to be more efficient with how you use your natural resources, particularly if you care about planetary health as well, but let's leave that aside. You have to be more efficient to feed more people. So now governments are also wanting to invest and see a global shift of the food supply system. Now you've got three major players all investing heavily, all wanting the same thing at the same time. That's an investable megatrend.
And now let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, Harpak Alma.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Harpak Alma. Our full-service solutions for AltMeat address installation, training, spare parts, service, and customer support. While capabilities span robotics and automation, thermoforming, tray sealing, filling, flow pack, stretch, blister, skin pack, and vacuum, we aim to provide every solution with smart connectivity to reduce solution complexity and cost, while realizing better quality and throughput. We focus on lowering your total cost of ownership and offering the most reliable systems available while addressing all your packaging issues. Now back to the podcast.
As you were talking, I was thinking of a couple of different things, particularly then I think this leads us back into the S-curve conversation in terms of the adoption trends and things. And one of the questions that I have, which might be part of the slow or the lower growth part of the S-curve, is that when you poll consumers and you say, why are you interested in buying, for example, plant-based, or why are you not interested? And actually, their awareness of the climate implications is still way down on its price and taste. But it seems as if maybe what you're saying is that it's a growing awareness, or that consumers maybe are being pulled along because of the twin pressures of both the government and also the science and the technology that says we can do this better and here's how we do it. And that gets everybody excited as well. Are we pulling the consumers along in that awareness category?
I would say they're actually not related. Therein lies the beauty. I would say that no one's pulling the consumer. The consumer wants a healthier option for themselves. And as the taste gets better and better, and it does get better and better, but let's not be like Pollyanna about this. You really need to invest in innovation. None of this works if you're not continually making better products. But I believe we're going to continue to invest because government and industry need to change their game. So you're going to continue to get that monetary inflow. Don't want to confuse people. I'm talking about sort of institutional, large-scale investment. Now, at the same time, the individual investor who might choose to say, hey, I'm going to figure out what VegTech Invest is up to so I can invest in that product, that's an individual person. So investors can have a secular trend moment, a big S curve, if they're looking to do that. So, but I'm also talking about investment from like the government standpoint. I think large money, China investing in alternative proteins, Israel, Singapore, Holland, Canada, the US, this kind of large scale money is going to continue into the sector. And that's going to make innovation better. And that's going to bring price down. So consumers don't really know anything about that. I don't think they really focus, or, you know, nobody, the average consumer doesn't know that the Biden administration is putting forth bold goals for biotechnology and biotechnology manufacturing, in which they include plant-based innovation, which is this umbrella of plant-based foods, precision and biomass fermentation, and cultivated meat. It's a significant pillar of that plan. Most people don't know that. I think the consumer is just saying, hey, I want better for myself. I know enough about animal factories. Let's not overthink it. They know it's there. If I can do something else, I will. And if it tastes okay, they're just working on a better option for themselves.
I think the health halo is now actually, in a lot of cases, becoming earned on the part of more plant-based companies that are working on, and not just Impossible with their new beef light option, but other companies that are deliberately innovating and moving toward making sure that they have a plant-based option that is lower in sodium and lower in fat, and not just on par with, but better than on a health basis. And that's a very interesting switch.
Yeah, so much to unpack there. I think of the Beyond Meat steak tips that I just had for the first time. And I was like, boom and boom. So there's this clean label product with lots of protein and super delish. Obviously, everyone's going to have to work on price, but really addressing that need for the consumer, we think, let's get back to that. But where I see mass opportunity, again, we're back to investing for this mega trend of adoption, In every other aisle in the supermarket, you have gobs of choice. Walk down the potato chip aisle and you're like, oh my God, will this ever end? It's like they're stacked. No, they're in a can. They're yellow. No, they're blue. They're salty. No, they're unsalted. It's whole grain. It's baked. It's fried. It's in a square. It's like the chip aisle is like never ending. Why is it that you can only have ribs? Why can't you have factory farm ribs that are super cheap that ultimately no one's going to want because of their carbon footprint and their stigma? You can have free range, but we all know that that's also its own environmental nightmare. You can have the plant-based gluttony thing like the comfort food. You can have clean label plant-based. You can make your own out of tofu. I mean, why do we have to label it or name it? Why can't the consumer have every kind of choice out there? And they decide, they do what they want. And sometimes you go for like the delicious bad label, like just take it.
So now it seems like this sort of plays into the S-curve idea. Although, as you said, you know, a lot of consumers maybe aren't that familiar with it. It is, as a macroeconomic concept, it's pretty ubiquitous in terms of you have a market and it grows slowly and it doesn't have a scale and it doesn't, you know, it has challenges and whatever. And then something will click, some certain number of factors will fall, and the tumblers sort of fall into place. And then it takes off with a rocket for a period of time, usually a long period of time, and then it becomes a mature market. And I can think of a lot of like past examples where you have, say, the buggy versus the car. And, you know, we had a very slow start and cars are very expensive and then it hit an S curve and the rest is history. And there are certainly other examples in economic and business history of this sort of shift in a market playing out. As you have written about that S curve in the plant-based proteins market specifically, what are those factors that are in play that you see in 10 years kicking over and this rocket ship sort of taking off in the middle of the S curve that will really make it more of that mass adoption, that ubiquitous product out of plant-based options?
Thanks for that question. First of all, huge hats off to Catherine Tubb, who's the director of research at Synthesis Capital. And she was also one of the main authors, really the co-author of the Rethink X research paper in 2029 that predicted the major shift of our global food supply system. So working off of her research, I say the following is, it is price, 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 and price. So I'm kind of dating myself, but do you remember when Reagan was like running for re-election and someone had the sign up like, it's the economy. No, spending stupid.
Yeah.
Yep. I sort of think like that. I mean, who are we kidding? Like all this aspirational eating, whatever, it is price. So, and price comes down with more investment, government industry type of investment, more spending in the supply chain to get manufacturing prices down. Now, according to Catherine's research, manufacturing costs come down around 2026, 2025, but obviously we're having still COVID playing out because now what you're seeing is COVID playing out in the markets. So while we maybe don't have the health scare, the quantitative, hope I don't get too financial for people, but the quantitative tightening you see now, interest rates hikes, is due to the quantitative easing that we saw because of all the money they threw in the economy. And they threw all that money in the economy because of the pandemic. So you're seeing the tail of COVID play out in the markets. So obviously that's going to throw numbers off a little bit, but their research says 2026, let's say 2025 to 2027, price comes down in manufacturing. Now, some brands will always choose to be higher because that's their brand. That's their gig, sure. You know, but once you get that cost parity in manufacturing, that's when you get really the up curve. So the S curve we're talking about. So you must continue to invest in the supply chain for better taste and price parity, build out that supply chain. So that's really what has to happen. They predict that it will, primarily because government and industry, again, we're not even talking about the consumer, while we love them and they're important, we're looking at government and industry saying we don't have a choice. We have to fix the global food supply system or we're in deep stuff.
And the governments are moving and they're starting to pick up the pace globally, right? Not just in Singapore. China will have to see. They mentioned it in their most recent agricultural five-year plan, but I don't think it's very obvious exactly how much research or how much investment that the government's actually making in it at this point. Israel, of course, is turning out tremendous innovations in the market, but with the government shift there, maybe their investment priorities might change. I hope not, but we'll see.
I don't think so. They fancy themselves as really tech leaders in the world, innovators of the world. Mm-hmm. I think they want to hold on to that, but you are correct. Time will tell.
Time will tell. So we have been talking about certain economic theories and algorithms that you can apply to a market and see how it develops and see what kind of return. And then there's the actual reality. And as a student of the markets, as a student of investment, and also as a keen observer of actual consumer behavior versus consumer predictions, on a scale of 1 to 5, where would you put the likelihood that this investable trend, that this S-curve together individually will play out as predicted? Mm-hmm. Might it take a little bit longer? Might it take a different shape? Or do you think it's actually going to work out just exactly the way it says?
Well, so here I quote the VegTech Invest research department. So I'm CEO of VegTech Invest, and our first financial product in the public markets is ETV. That's an ETF, an exchange-traded fund, which kind of functions like a basket. So if you think of going to the grocery store and you say, hey, I'm plant-based, I'm going to have black beans and rice and Beyond Meat Burger and some Oatly, and I'll have avocados and some sparkling water, then you check out and you're like, oh my gosh, my basket is, you know, 40 items of plant-based things. Well, it's the exact same thing with an ETF. You have this basket and you say, hey, I've got 40 companies in there, all plant-based, from around the world. So we've got that product. And for us, because we started in the market January of 2022, and while we didn't see this long COVID market tail, we didn't expect that. We do see pretty much, because the world is on such dire straits, one need only watch the Weather Channel to know that one, that we do see governments investing more and more, and that the 2026, 2027 timeline is accurate. And just to kind of underscore that, Boston Consulting Group still believes that way. Bloomberg Intelligence still believes that way, but so do other investing firms like Global X. It hits a tipping point at about 2032. Once it hits that tipping point, which is deemed to be 10%, so the S-curve really starts ramping up, but you kind of hit your stride at 10%, there's kind of no turning back. So I'd say there's two key timeframes, that sort of 2026 and then 2032.
Okay.
And so we really stick to that. And that's what our ETV ETF is there to do, is try to capitalize on that, because a lot of money to be made potentially. I'm not giving anyone investment advice. I'm just saying, like, even if the S curve doesn't look dramatic on a piece of paper until 2027, that doesn't mean that you aren't doing well. I don't want to promise anything. Just there's still
it's worth looking into.
Of course, yes, because it's not black and white. It's not like you wake up one day in 2026 and boom. I mean, it's constantly moving on this S curve. So there's lots of opportunities to get in.
So thank you for your time. And what I'm going to be sure and do is to put into the description of the podcast when we post it on the websites and in our newsletters, and I will make sure that we have links to the various studies and things that we have referred to here, because there are an enormous number of research studies that I've seen that predict the size of the market this way or that way. And most of them, I don't know what their methodology is, and I don't know if it's how trustworthy it is. And so I know that what we have talked to, the studies that we have talked about here, are from independent organizations that are highly regarded. And I believe that these numbers are solid. Personally, I know you do too. So we will work together and we'll get exactly the right links to put it into the description.
But this has been an interesting conversation. So thank you for diving deep with me. I appreciate it.
And thank you, Elizabeth. I really appreciate your explanations. You're taking it apart and putting it back together for us, because that investment angle is so important in this part of the market at this time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And thanks to today's episode sponsor, Harpak Ulma.
Remember to tune in on Mondays to get the inside track on the people and the processes that drive the protein industry. Be sure to subscribe to Meeting Pod on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow Meeting Place and Alt Meat magazines on social media, and be sure to visit our websites at meetingplace.com and altmeat.net.